Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, April 29th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, Medical Group, Midwifery, and Women's Health Services. Introducing the new physician midwife pregnancy care model at Saratoga Hospital, saratogahospital.org. Joining us on this Medical Monday, an old friend of this station, is Dr. Robert Sachs. He's an ophthalmologist, retinal specialist, and director of retinal services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region. He's here to answer your questions about eye care and treatment. Call us at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Sachs, your calls. And now the news. So here we are. I'm Alan, and we're with Dr. Robert Sachs. Dr. Sachs is a retinal specialist, director of the retinal services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region since 1989. He specializes in macular degeneration, retinal vein disease, and diabetic retinopathy. He earned his medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry. He's also certified by the American Board of Ophthalmology as a member of several professional societies, including the New York Ophthalmological Society and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's also a PhD, has studied assiduously, and knows the rigors of the academic trade. Dr. Sachs, welcome back to Medical Monday.
It's a pleasure to be here, Alan. Thank you.
Okay, so the phones are already beginning to load up. If you want to get in, now's the time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Bob Sachs is the top of his profession, and certainly in our area, he's the go-to guy. If you want to ask a question, now's the time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go and take our first call from who? Who do you think? Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
What are the earliest signs of cataracts that a patient may notice?
Well, let me talk a little bit about what a cataract is, and that'll help you with the understanding of the early signs. There's a lens in the eye, like a lens in a camera. It's inside the eye, and it's a disc of protein. Initially, it's transparent, perfectly clear, but it's made of protein. And as you get older and under the influence of certain things in your environment, smoking, diabetes, certain drugs, the lens starts to become less clear, opaque. And two things happen where the lens starts to change color, so it starts to discolor. Think of a pair of sunglasses. So it goes from clear glass towards a darkening. Also, the lens starts to become more opaque. Think of Saran wrap gradually turning into waxed paper. So you have these two things going on simultaneously, a little darkening and a little opacification. And over time, it starts to impinge on your vision, starts to affect how you see. One of the first things people will often tell us, though, is lights become glary. So, for example, they'll say, I don't like to drive at night anymore because the headlights are too much. They glare too much and I can't see. That's an early sign of cataracts. Changes in color sense. People will say, well, I'm having trouble matching my socks up. The dark colors don't seem, I can't match the black with the black. I get the blues in there and the browns. All these things can be early signs. Later signs, of course, is just more visual limitations. And the treatment is cataract surgery, which is done these days in a very elegant fashion, very state-of-the-art stuff, and in a very quick operation that only takes between 10 and 12 minutes for the actual procedure, cataract surgery can be done. The old lens can be removed, and an implant lens perfectly designed for your eye can be placed in the eye, and vision can be restored.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, and now on to Arthur in Pawling, New York. Arthur, you're on.
Yes, this is Arthur. I want to report a experience I had using hyaluronic acid for a case of severe floaters. I had floaters about 4 or 5 years ago in my eyes, to the point I had flashing bright lights in the evening. I have taken hyaluronic acid in the form of Synthovial 7 for about 3 years, and the floaters have virtually all disappeared. I still have one big one, but the flashing is gone, and the wispy little floaters I see are completely gone. And as a side benefit, my osteoarthritis in my hands is also gone.
Is there Arthur, is there is there a question here?
Yes, I would like to comment from the doctor about the use of hyaluronic acid.
Okay, good. That's good. That's a great question. Okay, hold on now, doctor.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what the source of the floaters and the flashes was, and that's often due to the movement of the vitreous gel, which is a egg white-like material that fills the back chamber of the eye, and that's attached by fine protein fibers to the wall of the eye. And as we all get older, those fibers tend to break, irritate the wall of the eye, and the eye sends a signal to the brain, which is interpreted as a flash. And then the floaters are these little pieces of protein that float around.
Arthur, you got to listen.
Taking hyaluronic acid orally doesn't get directly into the eye, nor does it get directly into the joints. In the case of the eye, over time, those floaters tend to go away. The flashes tend to resolve naturally. What hyaluronic acid does, it's broken down in the digestive system, and it's absorbed as its component parts, but not as its full chemical. We do use a derivative of hyaluronic acid in eye surgery, as they do in some orthopedic surgeries. There's a medication that's basically a thick, very viscous, thick, clear fluid that is made of a derivative of hyaluronic acid, and that can be injected into joints or to cushion the joint. In the eye, we use it during surgery to manipulate very fine and very delicate tissues without using surgical instruments that might damage those tissues.
Are you telling me that all my flashes and most of my floaters were just gone away naturally?
That's what I'm telling you.
And by the way, I came to see him about my flashes and my floaters, and he said, "Wait a little while, they'll go away," and they did. Thanks, Arthur. Okay, and now let's go to Mary Jane in Pittsfield, 1-800-348-2551. Mary Jane, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Sachs. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I have a question. Thank you. I have a question about cataract surgery when you're extremely nearsighted. I'm a -8.5 in one eye and a -7.25 in the other. And I understand there's some studies that should be done first, but I don't actually know the name of them, so I can do some research on them and exactly if Medicare covers them or not.
Well, cataract surgery is designed to remove that lens we talked about earlier. When you're nearsighted, it does put some extra risk into the surgery, but that is, as a routine, well taken care of. So nearsightedness, from a structural point of view, means that your eye is longer than average. And as a result, the wall of the eye is a little bit thinner, and that needs to be watched. But cataract surgery can be done quite safely in people with significant nearsightedness, and that's we do that all the time. So I wouldn't consider that a no-go for you. There are other reasons. Prior to the surgery, we would examine the eye carefully, looking for any weaknesses in the wall of the eye that might need to be shored up, for example, with laser, to make sure that nothing happens during or after the surgery. But this should not stop you from having cataract surgery. And nearsightedness is one of these things that people really find we can eliminate at the time of the cataract surgery. The implant lens we put in the eye to replace your cataract will eliminate your need for distance glasses and quite possibly for reading glasses as well.
Okay, well, that's what I had thought and had read about. I just was curious. Second question was, are those retinal studies done prior to surgery, are those usually covered by Medicare?
Yes.
They are. Okay.
Yes. Thanks, Mary Jane.
Well, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Bye-bye now.
All right. And now we're off to Rose in Menands. Rose in Menands, you're on.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask the doctor if there was any help for my son, who is 25 now, but he was born a preemie and was diagnosed at a very, very early age with Lord Cone dystrophy, so he's completely blind in one eye. Is there any kind of help for these days that maybe he would get vision in his eye?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Did he also have retinopathy of prematurity?
Yes.
And rod cone dystrophy is in a sense something else. It's a genetic predisposition to have difficulties with the color perceiving cells in the back of the eye. So that can be something totally different than the retinopathy of prematurity. The retinopathy can cause damage. Hopefully, it was addressed at the time that he was an infant and stabilized. We don't have a lot to do at this point for that because the retina, which is really that's the nerve part of the eye and is directly connected to the brain, that was damaged at the time of his development because of this, and we can't replace that. But he does need to be seen on a regular basis to make sure that there's nothing else going on that's going to further affect his vision so that he can continue to have the best vision possible.
So, doctor,
he has real good vision in the other eye, but he cannot see it all out of that one, that damaged one.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that he has good vision out of the other eye, but both need to be examined and kept, you know, something needs to be watched so that nothing else happens to either eye.
If we were looking in the future, what could we expect that we would really want to do here?
Well, you know, we're talking about...
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, we're talking more about trying to make sure that children aren't born prematurely so they have time for the eyes and the other part of the nervous system to develop appropriately while they're still in the mother's womb. That's the best answer right there.
Okay, thank you very much, Rose. Appreciate your call. All right, and now we're going to go to, very, very, very close here. We've got a Lauren in Clifton Park. Lauren, your turn.
Good afternoon. My call is about cataracts. It's like a three-part question. One is, does it hurt to delay getting cataract surgery? Is it riskier? The second is, what is your opinion on the use of the newer, I think they're silicone-based, lenses versus the old-fashioned ones? And the third is, I have been prescribed by my neurologist to have some hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatment, and I'm wondering how long after the cataract surgery should I wait before I start doing the hyperbaric treatment, or is it even advisable after surgery?
All right. Cataract surgery is almost always elective, meaning that it's based on your timing, what's good for you. And there's usually a fairly wide period of time that surgery can be done with no increase in risk before the cataracts get too big, if you know what I'm saying. That can be many years. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. Keeping a conversation with your ophthalmologist is always the best way to understand that. The second part of your question had to do with, I'm sorry, remind me again.
Silicone-based?
Yes, there's silicone plastic. Yes, the components of the lens, you know, if you've heard about other issues with silicone-based things like breast implants, well, this is not the case in the eye surgery world. We use a variety of different plastics to make these implant lenses, and some of the high-technology lenses that offer multifocal implants, in other words, lenses that will give you both distance and reading vision with the same implant lens in the eye so that you're really almost completely free of glasses use afterwards, those can be made of a silicone-based. But the silicone itself is quite, quite stable and has not had any of the issues that you might be alluding to.
And the third question?
The hyperbaric treatment, is it counterindicated if I have cataract surgery? And for how long after the surgery should I wait for healing before I did it?
Yeah, you can discuss that with your ophthalmologist, but I see no reason for you to have any concern about that. If you need hyperbaric treatment and you need to get that right away, don't delay. And the cataracts can be at least looked at, if not operated on, while you're getting those treatments on a regular basis.
Thank you, Lauren. All right, that takes care of that there. And we'll go to Kay in the Berkshires, 1-800-348-2551. Kay in the Berkshires, you're on.
Hi, Doc. All of a sudden, my eyes start, the only way I can describe it is to get dizzy. I'll close my eyes for a while, and it goes away. Any ideas?
Well, is the room spinning when you're noticing that?
Yes.
Like vertigo. That might be something more with your inner ear than with your eye, but I would start with talking to your general doctor. They can do some quick tests. They can look at your eyes to see if the eyes are showing any signs of shaking that could also be part of that. But vertigo can occur because of inner ear issues like little tiny bits of gravel within the fluids of the inner ear, and that can be helped with certain maneuvers by an ear, nose, and throat doctor. If it turns out to be something in the eye, then we can do that. But usually it's not the eye that causes that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Kay. And now on to Peter in Norfolk. Okay, Peter in Norfolk, we'll be taking a break. As a matter of fact, Peter, you just Peter, you just hold on. We have to take a little break. We have to take a little break. Zach, the engineer, is furious with me for having missed the break. So you hang on. We'll be right back to you. And we're back with Peter in Norfolk. Okay, Peter, sorry for the interruption. What do you got?
It's okay. Hello, doctor.
Hello.
I have glaucoma in... Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're hearing
you. Hello, doctor?
We're hearing you.
I have glaucoma in one eye, and I'm also taking duloxetine for peripheral neuropathy. My neurologist says I shouldn't take that. My ophthalmologist says it's no problem. What do you think?
There are different types of glaucoma, and you're probably being treated for what we call open-angle glaucoma. Are you using eye drops for that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the type of where the drainage port is working adequately. Well, not adequately, but it's not a a different type of structural problem. The type of glaucoma that can be influenced by some other medications that you hear about is a different type of glaucoma. It's less common, and it doesn't seem to be your type. So if the ophthalmologist says okay to use it, go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you, doctor.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You, Peter. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Greg in Kingston. Greg, you're on.
Yes. Hi, doctor. How you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
What I wanted to talk about was the effect of aspirin and NSAIDs. I had a knee replacement back in 05, and shortly after in 06, I had another operation to follow it. And I came out of it 2 days later bleeding profusely in my right eye. I couldn't see. I ended up with a transplanted vitrectomy. I later, after they cleared it up, was able to turn the bleeding on and off by taking naproxen. And then if I stopped taking it, it immediately went off. And then over the years, I stopped the NSAIDs. And then over the years, I was on a preventative aspirin, a baby aspirin, and I would get this bleeding on and off. And back in 2015, I had another operation, and I said I stopped the aspirin just for the operation. And from that day on, I haven't had a single episode, floater, bleed, or anything in my eye.
Okay, now here comes the doctor. Doctor.
Well, what's interesting is first of all, to explain that aspirin is one of its uses is to decrease clotting. It doesn't make you bleed, but if you were to bleed, cut yourself, or break a blood vessel, you would bleed more. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories have some of the same effect. What I find curious is that they were not able to find and treat a bleeding source at the time of your vitrectomy. They should have been able to look around and find the source. Where's this weak blood vessel? And that could be treated with laser or other modalities to seal it so that it would not continue to bleed on a regular basis.
What's a vitrectomy, Bob?
Vitrectomy is when we go into the back of the eye with special instrumentation and remove the vitreous, which is that gel that I told you earlier, fills the back part. And sometimes it can attach itself or be attached to fine blood vessels back there and can cause those blood vessels to bleed as it pulls away from those blood vessels and tears them. So by removing the vitreous and the blood within, that's what cleared your vision. But I was hoping that they could find the source of the bleeding.
The doctor's words, why he went to laser, and he said, I'm going to laser anything I think that might be there, but I can't really find any source that did it. And the same would happen several times over. I did talk to a nephrologist about this at a clinic, and he said that he tells his diabetic patients not to take baby aspirins when they're having their kind of problems, and the vessels are similar.
Well, that's a very individual thing.
Well, Greg, let the doctor.
That's a very individual thing. What I would do is keep in close touch with your retinal specialist and have them examine your eye, especially if you've seen another bleed. We can often locate the source and figure out what is the problem, where's the weak blood vessel, and possibly do something about it to stop this once and for all.
Thank you, Greg. All right, now we're going over to, sorry to rush everybody, but I want to get everybody in, 1-800-348-2551. Now we're going over to Steve in Schoharie County. All right, Steve, your turn.
Hi, doctor. Thanks for taking the call. In 98, I had a pretty major detached retina, and it was repaired with a sclera buckle. The buckle was still in my eye.
Yes.
And now one part of it is starting to make itself visible.
Okay.
So I've had the doc say, well, we can go in and try to just nip the end of it, or we can try to remove it.
Okay.
And I'm concerned about removing this buckle because it, although it's been over a little over 20 years, it was put in there to hold my repaired retina in place. So right. How much of a risk am I for having issues with the retina if the buckle is removed 100%?
Well, these are great questions. The reason the buckle was put in, and let me tell you what that is. When the retina detaches, it moves away from the wall of the eye inside the eye. Think of a piece of wallpaper peeling off the sheetrock. And what the procedure is to actually push the wall of the eye, push the sheetrock in to reapproximate, to connect it back to the wallpaper, right? Mm-hmm. And then this buckle is nothing more than, think of a belt wrapped, you know, just a little, it's a belt, and it's cinched up tight, and it pushes in the wall of the eye. And then over time, the wall and the wallpaper bind more tightly, and hopefully that's the end of it. But the buckle is left. But over time, sometimes that buckle can erode through the covering tissues of the eye and expose itself or cause irritation, inflammation, and even become an infectious source if it opens up to the outside. At that point, the buckle can be removed in part or in whole, and usually done so carefully that the wall and the attachment of the retina to it isn't disturbed. But you should have this evaluated by a retinal surgeon who's well-versed in this area.
Yeah, I did.
And, you know, if they feel that they have a good opportunity to do that, it may be the thing to do so that you don't have further problems in the future.
Thank you, Steve. All right, and now on to Eric in Albany. Eric in Albany, your turn.
Hi, Alan and Doctor. Thank you very much for taking my call. I've had extreme nearsightedness all my life. I think it was about 2400, starting in early ages. And about 10 years ago, I did have cataract surgery in both eyes. I'm an attorney and read a lot. And I noticed after a year or two that the right eye lens was not stable. So I mentioned this to the ophthalmologist, and the ophthalmologist said this was very unusual. We should remove the lens in the right eye and replace it. That was done, but now the right eye is nowhere near as clear and accurate as the focal in the left eye. My question is, can that replacement lens, which was, I guess, implanted differently than the original one, be removed? And can I restore my vision in the right eye?
The cataract surgery that was done, when cataract surgery is done, it's very important that the implant lens be placed in the proper anchor point within the eye for stability. And if there's trauma or some other reason afterwards, there may be some metabolic reason, something about your eye, where the lens goes out of position, that can cause a change because the lens is no longer centered. So they obviously felt that they had to remove that lens and replace it with another one. And there are other places, anchor points to use to secure the lens. Why the vision is not as clear may not have to do with the lens itself. It may have to do with other parts of the eye, and a good examination would reveal that. We don't like to replace lenses. We really don't like to replace lenses because the surgery is a trauma. The first trauma is the easiest and best, and subsequent surgeries can be more damaging to those fine tissues inside the eye. So we really try to be careful about that. But there should be an explanation as to why your vision is not quite as good as it should be, and it may not be the lens itself. It may be something else.
Thank you, Eric. All right. And now on to Linda in Stockbridge. Okay, Linda. Hey, Linda.
Hi, Doctor. You may have already answered my question. About 2015, I had cataract surgery on both eyes, and the doctor at the time told me that I was a candidate for the Restore lenses, which were going to correct my vision from nearsighted and farsighted all at once, and I would have perfect 20/20 vision, and I was elated. I draw for a living, and my previous nearsightedness was like 1.5, and I would buy the over-the-counter dollar store glasses, but it got to be too much, and I was enamored by the idea of both things being corrected. I went in, I had it done, but it turned out that it made my vision much, 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 much worse. I think I'm 3.75 now, and I need glasses for reading foreign films, reading the subtitles.
Sure.
I guess after, and I have dry eyes. So my question is, if I take them out, I'm terrified that my eyes will get worse, that there's scar tissue or that something else will happen. I have an astigmatism also, and I hope I'm saying that right. And I'm not sure if that was the reason why the Restore lens should not have been put in the first place. But I have them, and I'm afraid to take them out, but yet they bother me every day of my life, and I'm afraid that if I take them out, the dry eye will get worse, and that there could be scarring on the eyes, and
okay,
that would make it worse, and I should just leave it alone.
No, I understand. You've got a complex situation here. Let me start by saying that these lenses that were given to you were designed to correct distance and some degree of near correction. They were one of the first attempts at these multifocal implant lenses, but they didn't correct astigmatism. What astigmatism is the curvature of the surface of the eye. If you look at a basketball, it's perfectly round. That's no astigmatism. If you look at a football, it's got a long axis and a short axis, right? That's a lot of astigmatism.
Yes.
Most people have some astigmatism, and that what we do is we try to correct that at the time of surgery, and there are ways to do that may not involve the actual lens itself, but things we do to the surface of the eye to correct that and to try to bring you back to zero. So I'm sorry you had a problem with that, but I wouldn't rush to have the lens removed again under the same circumstances. I was speaking to one of the previous callers. We don't like to do that if we can correct what's already there, and there may be ways to do that without actually removing the lens and replacing it. Sometimes that has to be done, but sometimes we have other things to do.
Go ahead, Linda.
And I haven't had anybody tell me they can do that yet. I'm a little bit lost for where to go.
Well, what can I tell you? My partner's nervous.
I guess I got to go out of the county. Well, thank you very much, Doctor. I appreciate your opinions.
My pleasure. Thank you,
Linda. Okay, and now, without getting Zach angry, I think we can take one more call in this break. And we have several more people, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go now to Rebecca in Kingston. Rebecca in Kingston, you're on.
Hi. I was, like 4 years ago, I was experiencing night blindness, and I was diagnosed with RP, kind of abnormal case, but they said I had a signature scarring.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through all these tests, and they never found anything conclusive. My field of vision was good, and they wanted to send me to New York to have electrodes stuck to my eyeballs. And at that point, I decided I've had enough. So I've just been watching it for 4 years, and nothing has happened. Should I just stop worrying about it?
Well, if it truly is RP, it's a potentially progressive change in some of the photoreceptors in the eye, and so it should be watched.
Right.
It should be watched. And what they were trying to do at the time, I'm sure, was just trying to get a baseline. Where are you? So we have a basis of comparison so we can look into the future and compare back and see how slowly or how quickly things are changing. I'm glad that you're not noticing anything. There may be subtle changes. There may not be. It can be very variable. But I would certainly not be seen. In other words, not be followed on a regular basis to make sure that everything is okay. There's a lot of work being done.
I'm 56.
Yeah?
You know, I'm 56 years old, so
what's your point? How long are you going to be around?
I mean,
you want to be around for
30
years.
Well, that's it. I was wondering if it progresses really slowly, maybe it's irrelevant.
Well, progression can be slow at one time and speed up. I mean, I can't tell you without looking and without making some measurements, and I'm not sure we have to do anything that's terribly invasive. That's not the point. But just something to watch and to see how you're doing along the way and talk about some nutritional issues that might help slow things down.
Thank you, Rebecca. Okay, here's what. I made a mistake. Daniel should have gone right before Rebecca, but for some reason my eye didn't catch it. Daniel, if you're so kind to wait just until we come back from a couple of seconds, and you'll be the next one up. 1-800-348-2551. And we are back. Thank you, Zachary. And now on to Daniel in Rosendale, as promised. Thanks for your patience, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hi. My mother-in-law was diagnosed with macular degeneration, and I was wondering if you could just explain exactly what that is and then talk about any treatments that are possible, and especially any new treatments that might be coming.
Sure, I'd be happy to. First of all, do you like your mother-in-law?
Yes.
Okay. Macular degeneration, this is a big topic and a very commonly seen condition that we have as the population gets older. The macula is the center of the retina. If you think of the retina as the film in the camera, that's the back surface of the eye, and that's where the light is focused. The macula is the bullseye target. It's the center of that target. It's the most accurate vision. It's what you need to be able to read and to see colors and to see detail. And macular degeneration is just that. It's a breakdown of that area. The retina, of which the macula is the center, has a very specific and carefully arranged architecture of layers of cells, of nerve cells, and support tissue and blood vessels in a very precise organization. And for whatever reason, and there are probably many, genetics being one, exposures to different things, smoking, for example, is a risk factor, ultraviolet light. But the point is there's a breakdown of that architecture. And the back of the eye, the macular area, starts to degenerate. There are two forms that people speak of. One is the dry form, where the blood vessels start to break down and literally dry up, so there's no adequate blood flow to that area, and vision is lost as a result of that. That tends to be slow and inexorable, but slow. The other form of it is the so-called wet form, where the blood vessels break and bleed and cause severe and quick distortion within the architecture of the retina by this bleeding, and that can cause a lot of vision loss very quickly. So that's what it is. What do we do about it? Well, we look for it in all eye exams. We're really looking for the earliest signs of it so we can start to monitor and possibly change some lifestyle things, like some metabolic, some nutritional support things that can help make the macular degeneration less likely to progress, and monitor carefully to look for any signs of a conversion from the dry form to the wet form, which as I say, can be a much more rapid and visually damaging phenomenon. So really that's what we're after at this point, is early detection and then treatment to try to stop it, slow it down. We can't really stop it, but slow it down. Now, once it's evolved to a certain point and the wet form has developed and people have bleeding in the back of the eye and distortion, we have treatments that we can offer, which include injections of medication into the eye that act to stabilize the blood vessels. Not a cure, but a way to try to slow things down, try to tamp down the development of the condition, and try to preserve vision as much as possible. And it tends to be in both eyes. It may not be symmetrical. You may not have the same amount in both eyes, but you want to be monitoring both eyes to make sure that we keep things under the best control possible.
Daniel, thank you very much. Okay. And now on to, I've been waiting for quite a while, Marilyn in Greenwich, New York. Okay, Marilyn, you're on. Hey, Marilyn, you're
Hello.
On. Yeah, you're on.
Hello.
Marilyn, can you hear me?
First yes, of, for, I can hear you now.
Well, okay, make sure you turn your radio. Everybody who was on the radio, you have to turn your radio off because there's a delay. But go ahead, Marilyn, ask your question.
Okay. I have macular degeneration, and I've had it for several years, and it seems to be stable for right now anyway, and has been for several for several years. But I've read about stem cell surgery for macular degeneration patients, and can you tell me about it?
Yes. As the last description of what macular degeneration does, it damages layers of the retina, And there is a lot of research going on now using stem cells in a lot of areas of medicine, but in the eye in particular, because one of the layers that gets damaged early and severely is a layer called the RPE, which is a support layer. It's a layer of cells that supports the nutritional needs of the photoreceptors, those cells that actually do the seeing. When the RPE is damaged, the seeing cells don't work, and the support cells around there don't work, and there's your problem. So replacing or regrowing those RPE cells is a priority in the research world of ophthalmology, and there are things going on in that direction. It's very early on. You can't just go down to your local drugstore and pick up a bottle of stem cells. You just have to, it's going to be a while before that's available. Unfortunately, in certain parts of the country, way to the south of us, there are places that advertise stem cell treatments, and terrible things have happened to people. People have gone blind from their supposed treatments for using stem cells. They have tried to derive stem cells from fat from people's thighs and then inject them into the eye, thinking that that would be helpful, and it has caused terrible inflammation and problems. So don't go that way. The point being that the real use of stem cells is an ongoing and aggressive research venture right now through in a lot of medical centers and private industry in this country. And I'm hoping that things will start to come up in the near future that might be helpful. Right now, if your vision is good enough to be able to get around and do things, that's not for you. But hopefully in the future, things will be available.
Thank you, Marilyn. Okay, and now on to Jackie in Old Chatham. Okay, Jackie, you're on.
I'm here, yes. Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've been hearing about computer surgery for cataracts.
Probably what they call laser-assisted cataract surgery. Is the common term?
Is it okay?
And what it is this. I know what you're talking about. Cataract surgery involves making tiny and precise incisions into parts of the eye to get to the cataract, to remove the cataract to remove that cloudy lens out of the eye, and then to put in the implant. There has been a laser developed over the past several years that's available in many places, and some surgeons like to use it, and some don't. Certain surgeons don't need it because they can do it without. They can make those incisions so precisely themselves. They've had such experience that they don't need to use the laser. But some people find that the laser is more helpful. All it does is it makes those little incisions for the surgeon. It takes a little more time. It's much more costly to the patient because you have to pay for that extra work out of your pocket. It's not covered by your insurance. The outcomes in the hands of an excellent cataract surgeon, and whether they use a laser or not, are almost identical. In fact, they are identical. You really can't tell the difference. So it's... Go ahead.
Would it make a difference if I have astigmatism or very, very poor vision?
Well, astigmatism can be corrected by different ways at the time of the surgery, and that's something that you and the surgeon discuss. Again, a highly trained cataract surgeon who's got a lot of experience doing this can eliminate astigmatism in any of a number of ways, including the type of implant lens that's put in the eye. And sometimes the laser is used for that too, but does not need to be.
Thank you, Jackie. I'm sorry. We only have a few minutes. I'm trying to get everybody in. Yeah. I do apologize for moving ahead too quickly. Okay, we'll go now to George in Clifton Park. George in Clifton Park, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. My question is regarding the optic nerve. About 4 years ago, I had a full-blown eye exam, and they did find some astigmatism, but a slight inflammation of the optic nerve. And they told me just to, watch out for it when I come back, and they'll review it again. Is there anything I can take for that? Or they said there's nothing really you can do with that. But just your suggestions on that, any vitamins to strengthen the optic nerve or anything like that?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Okay. The optic nerve is a cable. It's a cable that's made up of maybe a million individual nerve fibers that travels between the eye and the brain. It carries all the information from the eye to the brain, because it's the brain that actually does the seeing. It's actually what constructs the image and tells you what it is. And there's information that flows back and forth between the eye and the brain. So the optic nerve is of critical importance. When that optic nerve starts to show signs of progressive weakness, that's a condition called glaucoma. But the optic nerve can also become inflamed, and there are various reasons for that. And I don't know if you know the reason for it. They may not have found it. And sometimes you observe it. Sometimes you have to treat it with anti-inflammatory medications. There's a variety of things. As far as nutritional support goes, there are things that we can offer. Best to have that discussed with your ophthalmologist. And there are some nutritional supplementations that seem to support the nerves within the optic nerve, the individual nerve fibers, and can help keep your nerve active and happy longer.
Thanks a lot.
Thank
Take
you,
care.
George. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We have a few more to take up here, and then you're on, if you get in. I'm not promising anything here. Let's go to Mike in Hyde Park. Okay, Mike, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. So about 10 years ago, I had a detached retina, treated with bubbles and a scleral buckle, and that resolved. Vision got really cloudy, and about 4 years ago, I had cataract surgery, put a new lens in. Since then, it just seems like out of that eye, things are a lot larger and closer, almost like I'm looking through a telescope or a magnifying glass. Is that a normal thing?
It's not unusual. So what happened was you had that detachment of the retina. They did surgery where they removed that vitreous that we spoke about with a condition with a procedure we call a vitrectomy. You mentioned a bubble, and it's not uncommon for us to use a bubble of air or chemical gas to place inside the eye as a stabilizer after that procedure. That bubble reabsorbs over time and allows the wall of the eye to stabilize. Then the manipulations of the inside of the eye contribute to a weakening of the lens, and that lens becomes a cataract more quickly. So I'm just kind of summarizing for our listeners. So at that point, you had cataract surgery, and they replace the natural lens with an implant lens. I don't know if they put a scleral buckle on your eye at the time of that surgery, but that changes the length and therefore the focus point of the eye. But the combination of things can cause some difference in the size of images between the two eyes. And what usually is a treatment for that is to take the other eye when its cataract gets to a certain point and replace its implant lens with a balanced lens and bring you back into size balance.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
All right. Now we're going to Marcia in Scotia. We might be able to take one more call at 1-800-348-2551. Marcia in Scotia, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about macular edema, which doesn't seem to be talked about as much as macular degeneration, something that I've had I was diagnosed with this a long time ago, and I had laser surgery, and then my retina got puckered from that, and I was told I should have a vitrectomy by someone who was doing a study on them, so I was kind of wary of that. I didn't get that done. I went to a different specialist. I had more laser surgery done, and then I was told that the only thing left was to have that injection in your eye, whatever it was, but at the time it was off market. So your insurance didn't pay for it. You know, you had no compensation for it. It was quite expensive. I'm just wondering if there's been anything in recent years that has changed in the type of treatment you would get for that, and also curious about some nutritional things that might help.
Okay. So just to go back over some of the terms, the macula we talked about before, that's the center of the retina. That's the most accurate part of the vision and needs to be flat. In other words, the retina is layers of cells, nerves, blood vessels, support layers that needs to have a very specific architecture. Edema is swelling. You get edema if you hit your hand and the hand swells up. That's edema of the hand. So macular edema.
Yeah, I'm also type 2 diabetic.
Ah,
I forgot
That's a risk factor for macular edema. What diabetes does over time is it weakens blood vessels all through the body. The tiny ones are weakened first, and the back of the eye is a very dense and very carefully arranged network of tiny, tiny blood vessels which are susceptible to the effects of diabetes. And the diabetes then makes these blood vessels weak. All blood vessels are little tubes. They're little cells that form a tube, but the cells themselves start to weaken as a result of diabetes and other things, and they start to leak. And that little bit of oozing from a lot of little blood vessels can cause the back of the eye to become swollen. If you've ever seen a, I'd like to describe the retina as a, if you ever looked at a piece of plywood edge on, you notice there's all these layers and they're sandwiched together very tightly. Okay, so that's what your retina looks like on edge. But you've also seen a piece of plywood that's gotten wet. And what happens is the layers start to swell and split apart. That's what macular edema does. That's what retinal edema does. So what you have to try, what we try to do is eliminate that. So you do testing with angiography, which is we put a little dye in the blade, the vein of your arm, and take pictures to see where the leak is coming from.
Yep.
Right, I'm sure you've had many. And we try to locate the source. And sometimes it's just a general oozing of blood vessels because of diabetic weakness. Of course, diabetic control is critical. But on top of that, we do have medications now called anti-VEGF, V-E-G-F, which stands for vascular endothelial growth factor. And it's found to be, the VEGF is a natural protein that regulates how porous blood vessels are. Think of it that way. In certain conditions, like macular degeneration and diabetes, there's too much of it. So the blood vessels become too porous. They leak too much. So we inject into the eye an antibody, which counteracts the effect of that VEGF. So it's an anti-VEGF injection. And over time, we can try to stabilize, lower the concentration of that VEGF in the eye. And by doing so, stabilize the blood vessels and make them less leaky and try to dry up the swelling that way. Mm-hmm. We used to use laser for individual blood vessels, but when you've got thousands of little blood vessels, each oozing a little tiny bit, laser is not that effective.
Marsha, I'm so sorry we got to go. Let's go to Tracy real quickly. She's the last one on the line, and we'll ask her to be quick about it. You said, Tracy, I know what you're going to talk about, the yellow line across your eyeball, a burned eye or a treatment.
Do you see the yellow line
when
you look in the mirror, or do you see
it when you look at it? Oh, yeah, you can see it. Yep, you see it in the mirror. And it's kind of like oozy, and then the yellow line's on the white. And there's a little bit on my other eye.
Have you had this examined? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, and they said I burned my eye.
Well, yeah, like on a hair straightener or something.
I have no idea when it happened.
Well, the point is that needs to be watched. It needs to be treated with possibly antibiotics, including ointment, to try to stabilize that. But the surface of the eye is pretty. It repairs itself pretty well under most cases. But stay in touch with your ophthalmologist. Make sure you do what he tells you to do and let this get better.
Thank you. Hey, Bob, we have a very quick one by email. I've been holding it for a while, but maybe you could do it in a minute because that's all we have.
Yes.
One, had both eyes cataract removed in 2010. Would 4 cortisone injections, 1 received over a 2-month period prior, have contributed to those cataracts? And 2, have not received further cortisone injections since. Is it likely that the cataracts are returning since I'm exhibiting recurring symptoms? And you got a half a minute from that.
We do know that prednisone, steroids in systemic use can cause, over time, cataracts. But injections, I'm assuming that was into a joint for an orthopedic procedure, that usually stays in the joint and has very little effect on the whole body. Again, when it comes down to checking your vision, I would check with your ophthalmologist and have them look to make sure that everything is okay. There are other reasons why the eye can change, except, you know, not just from a steroid use.
Perfect. Thank you. We're out of time. Thanks to Robert Sachs, Dr. Robert Sachs, for joining us today. Underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from Mass Mocha North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting the Dance of Ian Berg with Jacob's Pillow on May 4th. And Wilco Solid Sound Festival, June 28th through the 30th, massmocha.org. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe McAwert. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Again, Bob Sachs, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.